Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean. Well, if Russia doesn't work, we can always switch to Stormy, and more Stormy. All right, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. One follow-up. We'll get into this in more detail later in the program today. But the president hinted, and I was trying to hint because I knew this was coming, is hinting that the $716 billion that he has gotten to rebuild our military, and saying that our military is, again, rich because we do need to fill this gap of vulnerability once again because we haven't kept up with military spending and technology. Anyway, he wrote a posting, the president, about the increase in military spending, building a great border wall with drugs, poison, and enemy combatants pouring into our country is all about national defense. We'll build the wall through the military. Uh-huh. Well, I thought Nancy and Chuck were all upset that the president was going to only got $1.6 billion for the wall. He said, I want to address the situation on border security, which I call national defense. And he says, I call it stopping drugs from pouring across the border. I call it illegal immigration. It's all those things, he said. But national defense is a very important two words. And because having a strong border system, including a wall, we are in a position militarily that is very advantageous. Now, Chuck Schumer argued Sunday that the budget that Trump signed last week doesn't include money for the wall, but he is the commander in chief, Chuck, not you. I remember the president. He said, make Mexico pay for it. Too bad, Chucky. Trump's 1,000% correct. There's nothing more central to America's defense than protecting our borders. And as commander in chief, he'd be derelict if he didn't protect the borders. And so anyway, I doubt there's going to be that many legal challenges that can work, although I have no doubt they'll shop this through the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So we'll get to that today. Also, nobody's taken note that Rocket Man is not, apparently, according to satellite imaging, Rocket Man's not doing a thing. And it looks like Rocket Man has, in fact, stepped down. And there are reports out today of satellite photos indicating North Korea has now halted their nuclear weapons program. Well, I guess peace through strength definitely does work. Let me first address something that needs to be addressed here as it relates to Stormy Daniels and the Stormy coverage and Stormy. You notice, first of all, the media doesn't talk about Russia a whole lot anymore. They really don't. I mean, I'm looking at they actually are doing image side by side of Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. What is the one thing, put aside if you believe them, don't believe them or not, what is the one thing they're both claiming? A consensual relationship of, what, some 12, 13 years ago. That's the one thing that they are claiming. They're not claiming that there was anything that happened that was untoward or non-consensual. Now, why is that an important point? Because there's a massive double standard here. I've been saying journalism is dead. It is. And now we've got this endless cycle of fake news and pretty much liberal propaganda. And by the way, Kim Spring, but the brutal dictator has left North Korea for the first time in a visit to Beijing. Well, that's just breaking. Bloomberg now reporting that confirming that Kim Jong-un has now gone to the Chinese capital. That's interesting. The unannounced journey comes as the U.S. is preparing for their first face-to-face meeting. What? What? I didn't hear what you said. Oh, it's up on Hannity.com. Okay. Hey, travels to Beijing. This is pretty interesting. All right, we'll get back to that in a little bit. So, and this is, so you start with, I'm watching the breathless hysteria that some are calling news coverage on fake news CNN. It has literally become, in the lead up to and now post 60 Minutes interview, it's like the soft porn network. You know, starting last week with Anderson's interview, exclusive interview with Karen McDougal. We had a consensual relationship. Okay, is that big breaking news? Is that, anyway, let's take a trip down memory lane and let's go to Paula Jones and how the media attacked Paula Jones back in the day. Let's listen.
Yes, the case was being fomented by right-wing nuts. And yes, she's not a very credible witness, and it's really not a law case at all. I think she's a dubious witness. I really do.
We've got an awful lot to talk about this week, including the sexual harassment suit against the president. Of course, that one's tough to figure out who's really being harassed.
Is she not trying to capitalize on this, in effect, to profit from impugning the president?
I have to profess complete confusion over this entire case, why this is even a case.
Oh. Now, if you're listening to that coverage, what you heard there was, let's see, the Newsweek Washington bureau chief, Evan Thomas. He actually went as far as some sleazy women with big hair coming out of trailer parks. I think she's a dubious witness. I really do. Or Brian Gumbel. We've got an awful lot to talk about this week, including the Paula Jones sexual harassment suit against the president. Of course, in that one, it's a little tough to figure out who's really being harassed. Now, look, listen to these comments through the prism of now we live in the Me Too era. Because Paula Jones was saying, and by the way, she could identify distinguishing characteristics, if you recall, that became an issue. She's talking about the then Attorney General of Arkansas exposing himself to her and dropping his pants. And then we've got, you know, Good Morning America, Charlie, what's his name, Gibson, saying at the time to Sam Donald, why does anyone care what this woman, Paula Jones, has to say? Bottom line, Sam, is she not trying to capitalize on this in an effort to profit from impugning the president? Again, this is an assault. We're not talking about a consensual relationship. You all can decide on your own whether the women are credible or not. I'm not even touching that point. It's not even relevant when you really think about it. But, you know, it's the same network, fake news, CNN. They dropped in a single day 195 times the shh hold network, and they kept saying it. And they said it again and again and again.
Is there a difference if the president said hole or house?
Do you think these countries are holes?
Donald Trump has turned the Oval Office into a hole.
Holers built this country 110 years ago.
In addition to the president's hole comments yesterday, a few more.
Whole countries,
whole country.
Rich, do you have any example of any whole country that the president referred to that is predominantly Caucasian?
Holers,
holes,
holers. I work for holers. I'm proud to be a holer.
I never in a million years thought I would be saying hole on television.
Oh, they whole network. It goes on and on and on. Now, it's, you know, remember, all right, everybody probably has in their minds Stormy Daniels last night saying, I am not part of the Me Too movement. This was a consensual relationship. All right, let's listen to what was it that Paula Jones was saying about Bill Clinton?
We did some small talk, and then he started kind of getting a little comfortable and trying to, he said that he loved the way my hair flowed down my back of my clothes, and he liked my curves. Then he leaned up, and he pulled me up towards him, and he was going to try to kiss on me. And so then I tried to distract him again. I was trying to, and I thought, what am I doing? My mind is racing. I said, well, I may need to be going or something. And next thing you know, he pulled down his pants, his whole everything, and he was exposed. And I said, I'm not that kind of girl, and I need to be getting back to my desk.
I'm like, the latest thing is, whoa. Okay, he exposed himself. Kathleen Willey talks about an experience of being assaulted inside the Oval Office. By the way, these are all interviews I have done with these women. Listen to Kathleen Willey talked about being groped and grabbed and fondled and kissed against her will.
No woman should be subjected to it. But it was an assault.
He assaulted you?
Yes.
He touched, grabbed, fondled, yes. and kissed you against your will?
Yes.
And it's an allegation that is not made by one woman. It's made by multiple
Many
women.
Of us.
All right. And then one of the hardest interviews I did at the time, after Lisa Myers, I did an interview with Juanita Broderick. Juanita Broderick is coming by the show today, and she's going to be on Hannity Tonight. Now, Stormy says it's consensual. Kara McDougal says it's consensual. Where was the media coverage, the CNN coverage of all of this?
You described a scene where he was biting on your lip, and then when it was all over, he was leaving. Said, you better put some ice on that.
Yeah, and casually put on his sunglasses and walked out the door. And I've told my friend who came back and found me that I was sitting there crying and so upset at the time. And I felt like somebody, that the next person would be somebody coming through the door to get rid of the body. That's just about how I had absolutely, couldn't believe what had happened to me.
You begged them to stop.
Yes.
Where was the widespread coverage of these issues? So Juanita Broderick tweets out to Anderson Cooper and goes, how about having me on to discuss my book? You better put some ice on that. What Bill Clinton said to me after he raped me. That was on Twitter last night. Now, where am I going with this? I am making a point. Media in this country is dead. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about the facts. This is all about everything that I've been describing. All of these forces against the president. You've got the media against the president, Democrats against the president. You've got the deep state leaking against this president. Look at everything that happened and all the Hillary gets a pass. Hillary, you know, a FISA warrant, unverified lies get used to get FISA warrants to spy on people. All of this stuff is not important to the media that is so corrupt. You know, the Media Research Center did some amazing work on all of this. You know, these issues were never covered the same way. And the charges are far more severe. We're not talking about apples and apples here. Everybody's got their own set of standards, morality, what matters, what you're looking for and from a president. You know, but what is Anderson Cooper now consider to be journalism here? And why the double standard in this particular case when it comes to Bill Clinton's accusers and how the mainstream media had ignored these horrific charges. Now, it doesn't end with Bill Clinton's presidency because the questions were still relevant in the 2016 election. And for the most part, they tried to stay away as much as they could. It's just disgraceful, just beyond disgraceful. And they claim they're news. They're not news. That journalism is that we do more journalism in a week than these people do in a year. Oh, did you hear what Hannity said? He says, okay, we were first on the FISA abuse at Trump Tower and the wiretapping, as Trump said, and was excoriated for. Who's been exposing the deep state issues? Who's been talking about Russian real interference, a Russian bought and paid for dossier, Strzok and Comey, McCabe and Page and Loretta Lynch and how they put the fix in on Hillary's investigation? You know, we're the ones putting on the Uranium One informant every night, and he's going to join me in studio on Wednesday night. And none of these issues are touched by your media because they're corrupt at the core and they break nothing. Their big breaking news is Stormy.
Hey, everybody. It's Linda, Sean Hannity's executive producer. And you know what? I love fighting with Sean every day, but what I love even more is my Second Amendment rights and the ability to have something super cool like a custom-made holster. And over the past few weeks, I've been using a custom-design holster from We the People Holsters. We the People Holsters are designed for everyday carry and concealment, and they also have custom-printed holsters, so it can say whatever you like. Something like, I love Trump, or forget it, liberals, or I live in a blue state, help me. Anything you want. Something funny, something serious. Custom-made holsters by We the People Holsters has it. So for a limited time only, Hannity Podcast listeners can get $10 off their first holster by using the code Hannity during checkout. And each We the People holster is handmade in the USA, it's custom fitted, and it comes with a lifetime guarantee. Don't wait. Go to wethepeopleholsters.com/Hannity and use the special offer code Hannity at checkout to get $10 off.
All right, as we roll along, 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a part of the program. You know, if this is now going to be what news is, I don't know what to tell you anymore. You know, but the media defended Bill Clinton all throughout 2016 and 2017. We've got the audio. Let's play it. Because
the rape accusation is decades old and discredited.
Only in the sort of the mind of some sort of movie writer of a third world democracy or dictatorship would you have a candidate publicly humiliate a former occupant of that office by parading all of these other people around as well.
It's Hillary Clinton who is the candidate here, not Bill Clinton. She was not implicated in any misconduct. She was not someone who was accused even of doing anything untoward with regard to these women.
He more than paid the price for what he did. The mere fact that he went through an impeachment process as president means that there will always be a shadow on the legacy of his presidency. So at least from my point of view, I think he's more than paid the price.
He didn't get away with anything. Okay? He was investigated, he was litigated, he was impeached. He had finally, after lying about the affair, admitted it, apologized multiple times, in a very heartfelt way.
That's one of the many allegations against
him. Allegations.
Paula Jones, there's Jennifer Flowers, there's one Andrew Broderick, there's Kathleen Willey, there's a bunch.
Where was the type of attention, though, that we're getting for Stormy and Karen McDougal? I mean, it is, well, why are you laughing? Whose idea was that to come up with the storm cloud?
It's my idea, and it makes me laugh every time.
Oh, I'm glad you're entertaining yourself on my show.
I don't know why I get such a kick out of it. I do.
But this is the point. They never covered these stories. It never became the issue, except when then-candidate Trump invited, after the Access Hollywood tape, remember that Sunday debate after, invited Paula Jones and Kathleen Willey and Juanita Broderick to go to the debate. Anyway, we will be interviewing Juanita and Paula tonight on Hannity. Juanita is going to join us in studio as well. What are the differences, and do you really care? In other words, do you see what's going on here? Do you trust your media? Do you think you can trust them? Do you think they have an agenda? Does this not prove the agenda that I've been telling you for years they have, and how so-called journalism in America is dead? We'll continue. All right, 800-941-SEAN, glad you're with us. 25 now till the top of the hour. I cannot even describe. I'm looking at an article in the Daily Beast, and the headline is, "How close is Trump to a psychiatric breakdown?" With reports that a giddy commander-in-chief running around the White House like a kid freed of any adult supervision, having dispatched every moderate who hasn't resigned in the hopes of saving a shred of his integrity, Donald Trump now appears to be in a state of mania as he escalates his effort to bolster his fragile ego before he goes into the cage with special counsel Robert Mueller or fires him. There's so much there that's just so untrue that I don't even know where to begin. Then I go a step further. This was exactly what the contributors to the book The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump warned about 6 months ago. The psychiatric professionals who contributed to the book have monitored and come to know Trump's character better than most clients. Oh, you don't actually have to meet a client, talk to a client, talk to an individual. Because Donald Trump is unconventional, let's just imply and say straight up that he's mentally unhinged. Well, that'll invoke the 25th Amendment. If Russia, Russia, Russia doesn't work, and Stormy, Stormy, Stormy fails, Then I guess we can just go to the, oh, we've got to invoke the 25th Amendment of the Constitution. Lawmakers with experience as prosecutors or foreign affairs experts are sounding red alerts about how far out of control is this tormented tweeter. You know, it's sort of like, you know, every time I would go on a little tweet storm when I had time, and I don't have the time nor inclination because it's just, it became boring to me more than anything else. But anyway, it was always like the media would write up, Hannity goes on tweet storm. I was never on a tweet storm. I was laughing my ass off and entertaining the hell out of myself by tweeting out and having fun and just mocking people that I knew would bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer and water because their precious egos couldn't handle, you know, a good verbal battle. And it was always fun because especially people in the media, they cannot even, they can't take the fact that they're not looked at and worshipped the way they think they ought to be worshipped. Anyways, so it goes through a whole list of all of Trump's psychological. He's paranoia, exaggerated by the real and imminent threat for prosecution, intimidation of women. He has bought for sexual pleasure, is reaching a breaking point. Oh, who said that? Democratic Representative Richard Blumenthal, one of the biggest opponents of the president. And then they go to Chris Coons of Maryland next. It's an onrushing train heading at us, he's warning. Even more ominous encoded words of the former CIA director, John Brennan. Okay, yeah, let's go to the guy that voted for a communist for president that somehow worked his way into the CIA and under Obama became the director. Perhaps the Russians have something on Trump. Mr. Trump knows better than any one of us why the Russians might have something. Okay, look at what Donald Trump did to the Russians today. Oh, he put all these sanctions on the Russians again. Something that Barack Obama never did. You just can't underestimate the amount of hate that we're talking about here. It's just beyond the pale. And I think there is a collective, and I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, and I don't play one on TV, but there is a real unhinged media out there. Those very people that mocked and laughed at the idea that Donald Trump could ever be a candidate and said, run, Donald, run. Ha, ha, ha. You'll never win. You know, leading up to Donald Trump dispensing of 16 primary candidates. They never thought Hillary could win. The same people that are ignoring the biggest story in their lifetime, and I hate to break it to them, Stormy Daniels going on 60 Minutes is not the biggest story of our lifetime. It's just not. And I know some people think it is, but it's not even close. But we do have the biggest abuse of power scandal in American history. There was a reason why Andrew McCabe, the deputy FBI director, actually was fired. You know, we did learn certain things from the Strzok and Page emails. We did learn that James Comey and Peter Strzok put the fix in with Andrew McCabe and Lisa Page. And on the periphery, you have Loretta Lynch meeting with Bill Clinton on the tarmac. That happened. We do have a Russian dossier that was paid for with Russian lies to manipulate the American people. That was paid for by Hillary. It took us a year, but we finally found it. We did, in fact, we were the first to report that there was a FISA warrant issued for the Trump campaign, Carter Page, Trump associate, but that got them into the emails of everybody, pretty much. You know, we did learn that a FISA judge and FISA applications on four separate occasions, they never told the judge that Hillary paid for the information, which brought up the bulk of information, which was the bulk of the information in the applications and the renewals, or that Rod Rosenstein, you know, was part of at least the reauthorization of one, if not two, of those FISA warrants. And then he appointed Robert Mueller. There's so much. We're digging deep into the team that Robert Mueller put in. This is all stuff ignored by the mainstream media. You know, it's and then you watch, you know, Russia, Russia, Russia didn't work. And the hope right now is that Stormy, Stormy, Stormy is going to work. But how do you ignore an allegation of rape all up to and including through the 2016 election when Juanita Broderick makes that statement, or Paula Jones' story about being ushered into a hotel room where Bill Clinton propositions her and exposes himself, which, by the way, sounds eerily like Harvey Weinstein and his M.O. There's one article I read today pointed out, the Weekly Standard actually pointed this out, or that the groping, grabbing, fondling, and touching of Kathleen Willey. And while Monica Lewinsky might have been consensual, that's fine. No one's saying that was not what Ken Starr was delving into. It was about perjury, subornation of perjury, and obstruction of justice in that case. And the person that had filed the lawsuit was Paula Jones, who said she could talk about distinguishing characteristics, etc. Which I guess the attorney now for Stormy Daniels is suggesting in one interview that I saw. But anyways, and, you know, in this day and age of Me Too, I would think that in 2016 that women would have been concerned about what Paula alleged and what Kathleen alleged and what Juanita Broderick alleged. And they would have been somewhat concerned about a president with power, you know, having this relationship with a young girl. I don't know, she's 20 years old at the time, 19, 20, 21. The cigar issues and everything else in between, and that sorted affair. Or, you know, I was the only one that brought up the hypocrisy of Hillary and women. She wasn't asked about these issues. I still to this day cannot understand how the Clinton Foundation takes money from countries that abuse women, literally abuses them. Women in Saudi Arabia can't drive still. Oh, they're going to be able to drive. Well, okay, we're making improvements. Or cover themselves. They have to cover themselves. They're told how to dress. They're told if they can travel or not travel, work or not work. Can't drive a car. Can't be seen in public without a male relative. That's a lot of these countries. Marital rape in a lot of these countries that gave money to the Clinton Foundation. Marital rape is not a crime in a lot of those countries. And so on and so forth. Then, of course, gays and lesbians are killed as a matter of course. Christians and Jews are persecuted. Nobody cared about that in the campaign. Or that when you know, you go back and you listen to the things that were said about Paula, Kathleen, and Juanita at the time. I mean, you know, it was you drag a dollar bill through a trailer park and, you know, somebody with big hair. Remember this Nina Burleigh said, I think American women should be lining up with their presidential knee pads on to show their gratitude for keeping the theocracy off of our backs. Okay. Now she's living through the Trump years and literally said Melania. She had a recent Newsweek column headline, Melania Ivanka Ivana Trump wear high heels, a symbol of everything that is beautiful and horrifying about them. This coming from the same woman that wrote about every woman putting on their presidential knee pads. It's so bizarre. So if anybody's unhinged here, it's the left in America. All right, I may surprise some of you as we dovetail here. So anyway, I watched a little bit of the protesting that went on. Did you see the protesting with these kids this weekend? And they had a big crowd. I don't get into what's, oh, our crowd's bigger than your crowd. My crowd was bigger than your crowd. And it doesn't mean anything to me personally. Anyway, so I'm watching, and I know that a lot of concern. I didn't like how it was politicized. I didn't like the groups that seemed to be involved backing these students. You know, I get a kick out of these Hollywood hypocrites that I'm sure had, you know, detectives armed next to them the whole time. They couldn't possibly go out in public without some type of protection. And I think our kids, the only thing I would like to say, you know, it basically became a get out the liberal vote rally is this March for Our Lives in D.C. The only thing I would say to these kids is I'd say I want to make sure we never have another kid in America ever being shot at, ever. I'd like to make it that you get the same protection the politicians get. At least we owe you that. I would say you deserve the same protection that actors and actresses get on the red carpet during the Academy Awards. And I'd say, listen, here's how I want to keep you safe. I want to make sure every school in America has a threat security assessment. I want to make sure that the perimeter is surrounded and that there's control points of entry at every school. I'd like to see backpacks checked and metal detectors used. And I'd like to see every kid go, you know, through an ID system so that anybody that doesn't belong in that school can't get into that school. And then I'd like to see two concealed carry retired military or policemen on every floor of every school. And the way we're going to pay for it is anybody that contributes 15, 20 hours a week, retired military, retired police, to any school or any schools, they would get tax-free benefits, federal and state and local taxes. This way it won't cost us anything. And the threat assessment will be part of that deal. We could do it for free. Now, you can ban the AR-15 or certain common sense gun control efforts. Okay, then I can guarantee you that if you banned everyone and confiscated everyone, that they're only going to use another weapon. And then we're going to be back at the same argument, but we're going to have more dead kids in the interim. And I don't want kids dying in school. I don't want kids feeling unsafe at school. And if we can protect actors and actresses and we can protect everybody else, you know, our politicians, then we ought to be able to protect our kids. And that would be my argument. But the fact that these kids are marching and that they're engaged and they're passionate, I'm all for it. I have no problem with it. They don't have to agree with me. I'm glad they're getting involved. Now let's have a real debate. Now let's have a real discussion on how to keep them safe. All right, let's get to our busy telephones. Christy is in Kansas. Christy, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hello?
Hello. How are you, Christy?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good. What's happening?
Oh, not much. Just driving, so I thought I'd call in and give my opinions on the whole Stormy Daniels and the Anita Broderick and all that.
Did you watch that? Did you watch the interview last night?
No. I wasn't even going to put my sensor on that. I think it's completely, what they're doing is just to make it, they're hurting Melania, and it's bad. It was a consensual, if it happened, and I'm not saying it did or it didn't, it was consensual. How about what a sleazeball Bill Clinton was in his years, and how Hillary just demonized all those girls? It was just crazy. And I was actually a teenager when Bill Clinton, and just going into college, when Bill Clinton was going through all that, and I never voted for him. I would never vote for Hillary. It's crazy. And Hillary's saying that white women who are married or in Central America, let me tell you, Hillary, I'm in Central America. I live in Kansas. No man ever tells me how to vote, and I voted for Donald Trump.
Could you imagine if your husband or your boss or your son told you how to vote? How would you react? I know how I'd react at the thought that something that ever happened. It never happens.
I tell them exactly where they could go, and they never would because they know how I'd react.
Exactly. All right. Well, listen, Christy, God bless. What are you driving, by the way? What's your car these days?
A GMC Terrain.
A GMC what?
Terrain.
Oh, yeah. Great, great car. Do you like it?
Yeah, I love it. It's actually my work vehicle, so.
Oh, good for you. Well, just do me a favor. Make sure you are doing hands-free phone calling while you're on the road. I don't want you to get a ticket. Although, if somebody pulls you over, I'll try and talk to the cop and give him. I'll put in a good word for you. But just drive safe.
We'd like to thank you for this public service message, Sean.
Well, I mean, I honestly, now that I'm older, I drive more safe than I ever did in my whole life. It's crazy.
Uh-huh.
Yes, the case was being fomented by right-wing nuts. And yes, she's not a very credible witness, and it's really not a law case at all. I think she's a dubious witness. I really do.
We've got an awful lot to talk about this week, including the sexual harassment suit against the president. Of course, that one's tough to figure out who's really being harassed.
Is she not trying to capitalize on this, in effect, to profit from impugning the president?
I have to profess complete confusion over this entire case, why this is even a case.
The rape accusation is decades old and discredited.
Only in the sort of the mind of some sort of movie writer of a third world democracy or dictatorship would you have a candidate publicly humiliate a former occupant of that office by parading all of these other people around as well.
It's Hillary Clinton who is the candidate here, not Bill Clinton. She was not implicated in any misconduct. She was not someone who was accused even of doing anything untoward with regard to these women.
He more than paid the price for what he did. The mere fact that he went through an impeachment process as president means that there will always be a shadow on the legacy of his presidency. So at least from my point of view, I think he's more than paid the price.
He didn't get away with anything. Okay, he was investigated. He was litigated. He was impeached. He had finally, after lying about the affair, admitted it, apologized multiple times in a very heartfelt way.
That's one of the many allegations against
him. Allegations.
Paula Jones, there's Jennifer Flowers, there's one Andy Broderick, there's Kathleen Willey, there's a bunch.
All of which were investigated, litigated, adjudicated.
No, they weren't investigated, litigated, and adjudicated at all. And that's the whole big story here, is that if you watched Stormy Daniels last night or Karen McDougal last week, what did you see? You saw, okay, two women say that they had a consensual relationship and were adamant that it was a consensual relationship. Very different than the behavior of Bill Clinton. Very different from a guy that exposed himself in the case of Paula Jones, or groped and grabbed and fondled and touched and kissed against Kathleen Willey's will. Or the rape allegation that Juanita Broderick made, it's just dismissed. That's been debunked. That's not relevant. And all of this went, this isn't like old news. This includes up to the media defending all of this through November of 2016. And one woman you may not remember is Leslie Milwee. And she talked about two of the occasions where Clinton groped her while he rubbed himself up against her. And then it got worse from there. Anyway, so with all this talk about Stormy, Stormy, Stormy replacing Russia, 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 why is there this massive double standard in the news media? And how do you trust the news media? I don't think you can. Anyway, joining us now is Juanita Broderick. She's in New York. She's in studio today. She wrote a book that's called You Better Put Some Ice on That, How I Survived Being Raped by Bill Clinton. And also Leslie Milwee is with us, and she has the occasion she's going to describe in just a minute. Juanita, good to see you. You were one of the you even wrote about this in the book because I read your book, and I would think everybody should read the book because it's powerful, and it's You Better Put Some Ice on That. And one of the hardest interviews I have ever done in my entire life and career, 30 years in radio, 23 years at Fox, is when I first interviewed you. And I was stunned and shocked and saddened. And I knew the pain that you had gone through was real.
Oh, I know, Sean. Whenever you came to my home, you were only the second person to interview me after Lisa Myers did with the NBC Dateline. And you were so gracious. And we were going along in the interview. And all of a sudden, when I started to describe the horror that I had gone through at the hands of Bill Clinton, I look over at you and there's these big tears in your eyes. And it just really caught me off guard. I knew right then that you not only believe me, you felt, you felt for me.
I don't know how you could not feel. I remember what Lisa Myers called you and said, we're not airing your interview right now. The good news is you're credible. The bad news is you're too credible.
I know.
And NBC spiked the story until they were pressured by Brit Hume and others to do it.
Right. I was just, and I did not know what to do with that. I'd never been interviewed before. I absolutely, at the beginning, did not understand what she meant by too credible until someone in her group called me and said, well, you know that Bill Clinton and Andy Lack are good friends. They golf together. And she said the main negativity of this has come from Mr. Lack. Even Tim Russert wanted to have it aired long before it was.
Well, Tim was a guy that had a lot of credibility.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Did CNN ever interview you except for I went back and I looked. My notes showed me, my investigation showed me, the first time you were interviewed was by Jake Tapper in October of 2016. Were you interviewed by CNN prior to that at all?
Oh, no, no. And that was a surprise to me that they called and Jake wanted to interview me. And, you know, even though Jake has always believed me, the purpose of that interview was about the women who had made allegations against Mr. Trump. It wasn't about me at all.
Yeah. Let me bring in Leslie Milwee, who is with us. Leslie, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, I want to ask you, did you watch any of the Stormy or Karen McDougal interviews?
I did, just so I could see how everything was going to be portrayed, which I knew it would be put on the same scale or as examined as a similar thing as Bill Clinton. And that's the amazing thing. You know, Juanita was raped. I was sexually assaulted 3 times. The women that have come forward, we have, you know, we've told about horrible sexual assaults and harassment. And this is not even on the same level in any way, shape, or form. These, if this is true, consensual sex took place. I don't care. I'm not the moral police. I'm sorry that you did that. But you know what? Don't ever compare the horrible trauma that I went through as a 20-year-old in Arkansas with being trapped in a room and being sexually assaulted by Bill Clinton on 3 occasions to the point that I had to quit my job.
You were a reporter in Little Rock, Arkansas, correct?
Correct. I was in Fort Smith, Fayetteville, and he would visit our station. And he literally, the more I, you know, declined his advances, the more he was on a mission. And what he did to me was terrible. You know, it was just short of rape. It was a horrible experience, and it changed the course of my life. I have a wonderful life, don't get me wrong. He doesn't define who I am. But I think to try to put on any sort of level my experience, Juanita, Paula, Kathleen, anyone's experience on the same level, it's an insult to women. It's an insult to intelligence.
But we're talking about a serial a personality, a sick serial assaulter here. I mean, I think people are more familiar with Juanita's story, and I'll get to her in a second about this, but what exactly did he do to you?
He followed me around for several months. He had to spend a lot of time in Arkansas because of the Cuban refugee, the flotilla from Cuba. He went to Fort Chaffee a lot. It was my beat. I spent a lot of time around him, which after a while, it was very uncomfortable. He followed me into a very small closet-like editing room one time, touched my breast, came down, held me in place while he was doing that. And it progressed from there to the point that he was performing a sexual act against me. And I was 20. It was my first real job.
So your real job in television, and this is your desired career. What was the sex act that you're talking about?
He literally came up behind me. He held me down. He was behind me. He grabbed my breasts, and he pleasured himself against me from behind, humping me, and to the point of ejaculation. He did that to me twice. I had no, you know, there was no one I could go to. This is 1980. You're this young girl, and Juanita and I have spoken about this. It's such a difficult thing when you're, you know, people don't understand the culture in not only in news then, but also just women in the workplace. Who are you going to go to tell that the governor of Arkansas is sexually assaulting you? Where do you go?
Well, he's the top law enforcement person in your state and the governor. As horrible as what Leslie just described there, you describe a rape, but there's he's a serial predator though, Juanita. And that's why, you know, the comments I'll never forget. It's like stuck in my brain since you told me that day he's done raping you and you better go get some ice on that because he bit your lip. When you compare that to the media coverage of Stormy and consensual relationships, what is your reaction?
Oh, it's infuriating. Absolutely infuriating. I absolutely can't believe it. What I went through changed my life. You know, it was, I went through a horrific experience, and to try to get over that, you can't get over it. You can't forget it. It's in your mind and body all of the time. And when he had bitten my lip was swollen twice the size. And when he started to leave the room, calmly puts on his sunglasses and just sort of nonchalantly motions to my mouth and says, "You better put some ice on that." Who can be that cold?
And then Hillary is running for president. All of these, she claims to be a champion of women. And even made the statement at the beginning of 2016 that, oh, women have a right to be heard and believed.
Oh, my goodness.
My first question is Juanita.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and down the list, right?
Right. And that's whenever she said that you should come forward, you have the right to be heard, you have the right to be believed, we're with you. That's when I went on Twitter. Had to get my grandson to teach me how to do Twitter. And that's when I made that tweet on January the 6th, 2016. And it wasn't anything that I had said before. I mean, it was the very same thing I'd always said for many decades, what had happened to me. And then a week later, I mean, it went viral. And a week later, she took You Should Be Believed from her website.
Unbelievable. Leslie, when you compare the coverage of Stormy Daniels, were you ever invited on CNN?
I was not.
What about MSNBC? You know, were you ever invited there?
Never. I've never been approached by anyone from what I would call the mainstream media. I've talked to New York Times reporters, and I had a similar situation with as you did, Juanita. I had a New York Times reporter tell me, "You know what? Your story is so credible. I mean, you remember details." And I said, "You don't understand. When you're sexually assaulted like that, you remember everything. It is part of your DNA now. It is who you are. And you may be able to shelf it, but it's always who you are."
All right. We're going to have more on this tonight on Hannity. We're going to show you in all of its despicable coverage against the women, against Bill Clinton, and compare it to Stormy Daniels. And it should shock the conscience. There's such phony hypocrites in the mainstream media. All right, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. We'll get to your calls at the bottom of the hour. And Geraldo Rivera is going to join us in studio at the top of the next hour. Juanita Broderick is with us, and Leslie Milwee is with us, both victims of the serial predator Bill Clinton. And I go back to, you know, Juanita. And Juanita, by the way, this book should be read by people. If you got so into Stormy, which I guess had 22 million people viewing last night, and it was about a consensual relationship, and nobody paid attention to the fact that this woman told the story about rape. How is it possible? So CNN only interviewed you just before Hillary's election, never before.
No.
What about MSNBC?
No, never.
And what about the except for Lisa Myers, is there any other person besides me and I guess Dorothy Rabinowitz?
Dorothy Rabinowitz.
And that's it?
That's it.
For all those years?
Yeah.
And that doesn't count, like, the gaggle you did when you went to the debate, that second debate.
Right, right. And all they wanted to know then, they wanted nothing in the spin room to do with me or what had happened to me. All the questions were, how can you support Mr. Trump?
That was it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just spewed it to me.
Do you think America has a fascination with gossip? Should a consensual relationship from 12 years ago, what does that mean to you?
Oh, it means possibly infidelities. But my situation is a crime. So you're talking infidelities versus crimes, and there's no comparison.
And Leslie, you're Absolutely. Talking about a serial predator here. This is not once. This is, you know, numerous women, numerous assaults.
You know, that's the thing. If Trump had a consensual affair, you know, maybe that's not in good taste, but it's not a crime that deserves prison time. And that's what Bill Clinton deserves.
That's right. And he's not our pastor. President Trump is not our pastor.
No.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody expected a pastor-in-chief, to quote Jerry Falwell Jr., right?
You know, that's not my business. Everyone should make it their business if there's been a crime. I don't care who you are. And simply for the fact of his office and the protection that he's enjoyed and his wife supporting him, that's why I came forward. I could not bear to know all the things I know that she did to these women
and, you know, made them like they had done something, trying to turn it around. She could not be
always
my leader ever.
Well, Leslie, thanks for sharing your story. Very different than what everybody heard last night. Juanita's book, we're putting it up on Hannity.com. It's on Amazon.com. It's in bookstores. It's called You Better Put Some Ice on That, How I Survived Being Raped by Bill Clinton. You're going to join us on TV tonight?
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Juanita. Good to see you both. Thank you both. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, let's go back to last week and the president, I will never sign another spending bill like this ever again. Listen to the president.
Therefore, as a matter of national security, I've signed this omnibus budget bill. There are a lot of things that I'm unhappy about in this bill. There are a lot of things that we shouldn't have had in this bill, but we were, in a sense, forced, if we want to build our military, we were forced to have. There are some things that we should have in the bill. But I say to Congress, I will never sign another bill like this again. I'm not going to do it again. Nobody read it. It's only hours old. Some people don't even know what it is. $1.3 trillion. It's the second largest ever. President Obama signed one that was actually larger, which I'm sure he wasn't too happy with either. But in this case, it became so big because we need to take care of our military. And because the Democrats, who don't believe in that, added things that they wanted in order to get their votes.
Now, what's amazing about this is the president's, it's so funny how things work and what's in the president's mind. So the president now, remember, he got $725 billion with a B for the military, which is the reason he said he signed this crappy bill. But it looks like the president, in his infinite wisdom, has found a way to bypass do-nothing Republicans in Congress and their obstructionist Democratic colleagues like Pelosi and Schumer that were making fun of him. And he is going to be exercising his powers of commander-in-chief and, for national security reasons, will be allocating the money to build the entire wall from the defense budget. And frankly, if he does call it a matter of national security, which it indisputably is, how does anybody stop it? So the president's going to sign that order, and I want to see Chuck and Nancy's heads explode. But anyway, the president... And I knew this was coming. I just kept my mouth shut, and I suggested it ever so humbly last week, that the military could be tasked with building the wall. Because he tweeted this weekend, because of the $716 billion gotten to rebuild our military, many jobs are created, and our military is rich again. And he wrote in a posting about the increase in military spending, building a great border wall with drugs, poison, and enemy combatants pouring into the country is all about national defense. Build the wall through the military. Now, how do you stop the commander-in-chief from allocating and doing exactly that? You cannot, which is brilliance on his part. But as we saw with Stormy Daniels, it's Russia, 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 Stormy, Stormy, Stormy. Well... Here's the amazing thing. So the president also looks like he wants to clean out the deep state by appointing John Bolton now to be the national security advisor. And just listen to the media go insane over that.
McMaster, and we bring in John Bolton. This is bringing in Tojo. He said to them, no more stupid wars. Now he brings in the godfather of stupid wars, John Bolton.
I think the president is assembling a war cabinet to take a war to Bob Mueller. He's got Joe DiGenova. To take a trade war to China, he's got Larry Kudlow. And now to actually have a real war, he's got John Bolton. And the only question is, will we find ourselves in a military conflict vis-a-vis North Korea or Iran or both?
If the foreign policy goes in the direction that he has advocated, we are going to be in for a very... rough, if not calamitous, time ahead.
Yeah, this is a bucking bronco.
This man has called for preemptive strikes on North Korea and Iran for the nuclear programs. What is going on with this guy? I find him to be dangerous, and it's put me into a state of anxiety today, frankly.
Well, if there's one guy that understands the deep state, it's John Bolton.
You know what, Sean? I have to interrupt for 1 second.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Please,
it's your show.
Of course, you know, just for a brief
moment.
Here
we go, New York.
You know, just taking a step. But no, in all seriousness, you know I speak for the whole team. You know, we were sitting here during your interview with Paula and talking to, Juanita and, you know, and Leslie. And I really just wanted to say, you know, as a woman, you know, watching all of this media spin, you know, taking the time to speak to these victims, it's really important. You know, you can really see the pain in Juanita's face and hear it in Leslie's voice. And
well, as I told Juanita, let me tell you something. It was one of the hardest, if not up to that point in my life, and I've had a lot of hard interviews, I don't feel pressure doing a radio or TV show. I just don't. But when I interviewed Juanita, I literally had to bite the inside of my cheek because I swore to I'm never going to cry on TV.
You described a scene where he was biting on your lip, and then when it was all over, he was leaving. Said, you better put some ice on that.
Yeah, and casually put on his sunglasses and walked out the door. And I've told my friend who came back and found me that I was sitting there crying and so upset at the time. And I felt like somebody, that the next person would be somebody coming through the door to get rid of the body. That's just about how I had absolutely couldn't believe what had happened to me.
You begged them to stop.
Yes.
I wanted to cry for that woman.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's something just so upsetting. Like, here are two women who are talking about, you know, the fact that they had an affair with someone who wasn't a president 12 years ago. And, you know, they're talking about something that they did consensually. And the media hasn't stopped talking about it for days and days and weeks and
weeks.
They're
not gonna. They're just going to keep going and going and going.
But they never talked about Juanita. They never talked about Paula.
Well, that's why I brought up those quotes earlier in the program.
It's horrible. And it's anyways, just kudos to you.
No, here's the thing. I mean, once they say it's consensual and they had a relationship, I guess it was a one-night stand, really, in the case of Stormy Daniels. You said it was only one time. And people can choose to believe, not believe. I'm not getting into any of those issues or Karen McDougal or whoever. I don't disparage people. Whatever their motives, whatever they want to tell, I believe in freedom of speech. It was just like I watched these kids this weekend, and I know some of my conservative friends were outraged about what they're saying, and I took it totally differently. I'm taking it as, good, they're involved. Now let me explain to these kids why I want to keep them safe and how I think we can keep them safe. And even if we disagree, if they really care, my method would keep them safe. My method would ensure that we could stop 99%+ of these school shootings. I mean, I guess there's always a way to circumvent something. In the case of, I think Americans knew when they were electing Donald Trump that they weren't electing a pastor. I think they knew of his life as a New York, you know, high-end realtor guy, real estate guy, that was not, we all heard the tape on Access Hollywood. Nobody liked it. I think that's the point. Look, anybody, if this is now going to be the standard, fine. But the standard's got to be applied equally. And a consensual relationship versus rape, exposing oneself, and groping, fondling, grabbing, touching, and kissing against a woman's will are very different. And the facts are the facts, that the media only cares and only wants to highlight the consensual relationships because it's Trump. They would, the entire 2016 election cycle, you know, they weren't asking Hillary about the women that were victims. You know, Hillary said, every woman has a right to be heard and believed. Well, the next logical question is, do you believe Juanita, Paula, Kathleen, and others? That she never gets those questions, or the fact that she took money for the foundation from countries that abuse women and persecute and kill gays and lesbians and persecute Christians and Jews. I wouldn't take money from those countries.
And also the fact that people say, oh, that's old news, the Bill Clinton, the Hillary stuff, that's old. Why are we bringing this up? It's like, you know, unless you're a victim, you wouldn't understand that pain follows you through life. That's not just something you wake up one day and say, oh, I was raped 5 years ago. I don't even think about it anymore. Oh, I was raped 10 years ago. I don't think about it anymore.
I know women who have been through this hell, and there is, and that's the only way to describe it. It is a trauma that you'll never get over completely. You know, and as strong as people can be, it is such a violent violation, and there's violence. It's you know, Put Some Ice on That as a book, and it's never been featured on 60 Minutes.
You described a scene where he was biting on your lip, and then when it was all over, he was leaving. Said, you better put some ice on that.
Yeah, and casually put on his sunglasses and walked out the door.
And I've told my friend who came back and found me that I was sitting there crying and so upset at the time. And I felt like somebody, that the next person would be somebody coming through the door to get rid of the body. That's just about how I had absolutely, couldn't believe what had happened to me.
You begged them to stop.
Yes.
I mean, I think that is a very profound difference here. And I guess I'm the only one, like usual, I'm the only one in the media pointing out what is a glaring hypocrisy. But this is why I keep saying that journalism and media in America is dead and buried, and it's sad, and it's the double standard is so transparent. And this is a perfect case in point. I don't know what happened in any of those cases, but I do believe Juanita, and I do believe Paula, and I do believe Kathleen, and I believe Leslie. And the reality is, I think that because of Bill Clinton's politics, and he was, quote, a liberal and a Democrat, and he agreed with them on certain issues, he got a pass. And I think that pass existed all the way up to and including November of 2016. You know, this new look, I don't think the Me Too movement is a bad movement at all. I think that, you know, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world need to be exposed, and men need to respect women, period. End of sentence. I don't even think there shouldn't be a debate. But if we're going to apply standards that are so high on one president that has had a consensual relationship, then you got to apply it equally when a president and a first lady protected the president and protected her husband all those years when he's a known predator.
And also
he is Harvey Weinstein to me.
And also
and
the
worse.
Fact that Donald Trump was not an elected official at this time. He was acting as a private citizen. And whatever happened between those two adults happened when he was a private citizen. If they want to bring it up now that he's a president, that's fine. But as a sitting president, to have these kinds of accusations, like Kathleen Willey, these things happened to her in the Oval Office.
The amazing thing is, and I learned something during the Clinton impeachment years, and that was about, and ended up being about Monica Lewinsky. But it really was more than that. It was about Paula Jones. And everybody, he lost that case. He paid an $850,000 settlement, lost his law license, and he was impeached. It wasn't about the intern, but think of it through, look at Monica through the prism of this Me Too movement. Okay, how old was she at the time? 19, 20, 21, something like that? Okay, and he's the president of the United States of America. Do you see a power imbalance here that is somewhat inappropriate? Yeah. And nobody cared about it at all. And you just want to talk about sex. Actually, I don't. I think there are certain things in everybody's life that are just nobody else's business. And I have been so libertarian on this issue for so many years. And that goes for anybody. I don't think anybody really, really cares, even though they feign outrage about what people do consensually in the privacy of their own homes or apartments or hotels. I don't think most people care. You know, we have enough trouble putting food on the table, getting our kids out to school, getting them into a good college, surviving, and most people are gulping water every day. There might be a titillating side of this, gossipy side of this that people like, but for the most part, does it really transform their belief or their mindset about somebody? I don't believe it does. We're way too busy. I don't care who people date. I just don't care. I don't care what their sex lives are. It's none of my business. And I felt that way for forever. And I think the idea that people act like they're so outraged about it all is just, it's not accurate. What? Go ahead.
Nope. This is a simple thank you from the team. Lauren, myself, and the guys were just grateful. We were so happy to see you do this interview with her today. And it's
wait till tonight.
To have her in studio.
Oh, I'm taking on the whole media tonight. This has just gotten so bad. It's so out of hand. There's such a double standard. There's such hypocrisy. It's ridiculous.
I think you should be looking out the window for the pigs flying since I paid you a compliment on air.
You know, I didn't even notice that.
Any
I'm so
second
busy.
Now, you're going to see it.
Yeah, that we really speak the
Everyone
team.
In here is happy that I'm speaking for them and saying
Yeah, Blair does all our web work, and Blair is just sitting there. But when you need Blair, I mean, he's here when we don't need him. I don't need you here today. I don't need one thing from you today.
I need him.
All right, 800. Geraldo's in studio. He's laughing at all this. When we come back, he has lived like 1,000 lives in one. He'll join us next. All right, news roundup, information overload hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. It's an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to welcome in studio our good friend Geraldo Rivera. He has his brand new book out, The Geraldo Show, a memoir. And I spent all of Saturday reading every page cover to cover. I had the honor in this book of actually writing the introduction of the book. Geraldo, I know he drives some of you nuts on TV. He drives me nuts on TV sometimes. But he's a Patriot's Patriot. And when you read this book and, you know, you have put your life, you wanted to die in the battlefield. You even say you wanted to die in the battlefield.
You know, I would be honored when you think of how I have lived my life, to die with my boots on alongside, yeah, shoulder to shoulder our wonderful GIs in combat there. You know, I like life too, but if you go into battle, you know, fearful of your own fate, then you don't work as aggressively as you might otherwise.
Well, one of the things that I loved about the book, it takes you through your, this is a biography. I've always said about you, and people don't understand, we're friends and have been close friends now for a long time, although we started out in a very bizarre way, which I'll tell in a second, you tell in the book. But I love that you're passionate about your beliefs. You've lived 1,000 lives in one. This is what people don't understand. I mean, you know, from your days of, you're, what, 48 years now on television?
48 years, yeah, as of Labor Day, yeah.
And you go through the biography. You were in New York. How old were you when you broke the Willowbrook story?
I was 27 years old, a young lawyer, a year and a half in the business. And there was the world's largest and one of the worst institutions on the planet for the developmentally disabled, the population we call mentally retarded in those,
right,
days, the Willowbrook Institution. I was just kind of wet behind my ears. I had no experience with the whole
issue.
How
did you get in there to see all? It was tragic. I remember it. It was vivid. It had an, it made an impression on me back in the day that I didn't even realize human beings can't be treated this way.
That's what it was like, the worst kennel in the, yeah, whole, in the whole world. I knew some doctors, some activist doctors that I had met during, you know, previous stories I had done. And also in my life as a young attorney representing like the Young Lords and other activist groups like that. So they called me. They were public health service doctors. They worked at the institution. They were quitting. And they said that they could get me a key. It's so bad. And I, like I said, I had no preparation for it. They got me the key to Ward 6B. And I went in and there I saw, you know, the most incredibly horrifying scene anyone could
in their own feces, naked, living in urine, and really, you wouldn't treat an animal the way they were treating these people in this institution.
To this very day, of all the people who respond to me, and you know, lots of people were very friendly. I've been on television, like you said, half a century. It's the families of the disabled, the developmentally disabled, who come to me as if I'm a member of their family. You have to remember that, like, everybody would. A child with a Down syndrome, for example, they would be institutionalized in the old days. Anyone with what we call autism.
Look at the Kennedy family, what they did to one of their daughters.
And even, yeah, going so far as, you know, what do they call it? The shock, the brain.
Electric shock therapy.
And it was just horrible stuff. And,
well, the
and
Kennedys
surgery.
Actually did it. Joe Kennedy, the father of Jack Kennedy.
Lobotomies. They
did basically a lobotomy and destroyed this girl.
On Rosemary.
And she was institutionalized for the rest of her life.
I mean, even, I think that a lot of what their activism now in the area is a familial guilty conscience over the way they treated their own. But lots of people did. Poor people, rich people, everybody, they were encouraged to institutionalize their youngsters. Don't deal with the severe retarded population, as they called them then, the profoundly retarded. Now,
by the way, I want everybody to know this was the terminology back in the day.
Back in 1972.
Yeah.
Yep, it absolutely was. And now we have evolved. Now we know that they have the same right to as normal a life as they possibly can, to have their potential fulfilled.
And when they're loved and nurtured.
And live in a small community-based,
right,
environment.
They do very well. Better than anybody ever thought.
Vocational training.
Yeah, everything.
Absolutely. This population has been liberated now, and all these awful institutions have been closed, thank God. But it was quite a start to my to my life, to my career. It led me, you know, from the Eyewitness News days. It nationalized me as a personality, started my first national show, Good Night America.
I remember that too.
Wild.
You know, well, this is the thing, and we go through in this book, you take us through your life and your career, and okay, that was one big moment with Willowbrook, but then you were a street reporter in New York. You're the first million-dollar man out on the streets reporting for ABC7, and then the time that you spend at 2020, and then the time that you started your daytime show, and you even did a morning show at one point. You were on Good Morning America. I didn't even
Good
know
Morning
that.
America, the founding yeah. cast of Good Morning America. Yeah, yeah. I was there with David Hartman, Nancy Dussault, Frank Gifford.
Right.
You know, Don Meredith.
Right.
They were together, Don Meredith and Frank Gifford. We used to go out, all night, go wake up and do the show and then go to sleep.
There's a lot of stories that I know that are not in the book.
Oh, no, we don't tell those stories in this book. This is a memoir of war and peace and remembrance and my relationship with the president.
One of the things, and I'm going to get to that, we're probably going to keep you, as a matter of fact, we'll take calls at the bottom of the hour with Geraldo, if that's okay with you guys, okay? And one of the things that I love about it is I've lived a big part of this second half of your life. And I'm reading transcripts of when you were in Tora Bora. You were there alone. The description, I never knew how bad it was and how difficult it was and how you had basically bought your way into Tora Bora. And I'm learning, and how you bought a gun to protect yourself. I'm proud of you for that. But all of these experiences, you really could have died there.
I just want to say that our friendship is a big part of this book. How... You know, we're different generations. Ideologically speaking, we're
catching
different.
Up though fast.
Your hair is, I noticed.
Oh boy,
you haven't.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Get the Lady Clairol or whatever.
Seriously, Geraldo, you come into my studio. I'm saying it's the best book I ever read. You've lived a thousand lives, but our intersections are amazing. I guess I have to tell the story.
Good.
So the day you got hired, now I was competing against you. You were on CNBC and during OJ and Lewinsky, you had a massive cable audience. And I remember when I started, I was up against you, Brian Williams, Larry King. I mean, we had some really stiff competition.
At 9 o'clock.
They
were all in their heyday, too.
And at one point, the only one that was left that we weren't beating was you. And you were doing really well. And then I was doing my radio show one day and I got word you're hired. And I'm like, Geraldo, why are we hiring him? I've been at war with this guy and I go off. And Roger got mad.
Roger Ailes, our boss, the founder of Fox News.
He pulled me into his office the next day. And the great behind-the-scenes story is I was warned he's pretty pissed off. He doesn't like people telling him how to run his network. And so I walked in. I said, you know what, boss? I'm so sorry. He had a speech. He was going to rip me. I am so sorry. I, you know what? Who am I? I'm just a dopey talk show host. I talked, and he's like, and finally, I wouldn't let him talk. He goes, get out of here. I said, it'll never happen again. That's how that meeting went down.
But starting from that, where you had 180-degree opposition to me, we've become the best friends. 17 years later, we've become best friends.
I have never met anybody as kind, generous, passionate, loving as Geraldo Rivera. I know a lot of people talk about, you've been married five times.
And I've been busy.
And every ex-wife loves you more than the other because you've always been kind and generous and it was never, how did you pull that off?
Well, that's
everybody else I know divorced, I hate the other person.
That's an excellent question. Yeah. There has never been a public word uttered from any of my four ex-wives, a negative word about me. I mean, and I think the key to it is to remember when you get divorced, first of all, why did I get married so many times? I got married because I believed in marriage. I'm an old-fashioned 1950s kind of guy. It's just the pressure of being a celebrity and young and having money for the first time.
Yeah, the pressure of being a celebrity. And getting all that money. Everyone's really relating to that.
But the key is to be generous and not and remember that you love them. And particularly the last two, you know, they have mansions, they living well. And, you know, I honor them. I love them. The mothers of my children, they're part of my extended family.
And you still see them.
I see them. We see them all the time. They're invited. They'll be at the book party next week.
Yeah. Are there going to be five ex-wives there? Four? Are they all going to be there? I'm throwing this book party for Geraldo.
So nice of you.
The book is called The Geraldo Show. So you're in Tora Bora. This was really precarious. I didn't know until I read the book, and you did have a few transcripts of when you were on Hannity and Combs at the time. I had no idea.
The thing about Tora Bora is we knew the war had basically ended. Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, fell in November of 2001. First of all, I think a very interesting story is why I left CNBC. Very briefly, I left CNBC because even though I had the number one rated show, Rivera Live, they would not let me go to Afghanistan after 9/11. 9/11 was something that was like a knife in my belly.
What was you wrote in the book? How many people in your community, like 195 fathers?
Of just Middletown, New Jersey, because Cantor Fitzgerald, the big financial firm at the World Trade Center, two floors were wiped out. They lost like over 600 of their 900 New York employees on 9/11.
A kid that I went to high school with, he died that day.
Terrible, just terrible.
And his brother.
My then 6-year-old, when I finally got her on the phone, said, "Daddy, I know girls whose daddies were killed, and you know, six dads in their grade school, six dads in their little grade school, you know, Rumson Country Day." It was just so painful, and to not be able to go and cover the war. I was working at CNBC. Roger had asked me to come to Fox News. I turned him down a couple of times, but after 9/11, after the war.
And you took a big pay cut because you wanted to go to Afghanistan.
I took a cut from 5 to 2. I mean, that's a big cut. I took 40%.
40% of what you were making.
60% off. Yeah, I was working for Fox for 40% of what I was getting at CNBC. But I was going after Osama bin Laden, who killed my friends, who disrupted my city. And to go there. So anyway, the war against him, against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, going very well. All the whole country is basically conquered, but bin Laden is still at large. I get a tip from Abdul Abdullah, the guy who runs the co-president of Afghanistan to this day. We think he's in Tora Bora. We'll get you a helicopter down to Jalalabad, same place where they brought his dead body 10 years later. Jalalabad, and then you can convoy to Tora Bora.
Yeah, by the way, this helicopter was left over from the Mujahideen fighting the Russians.
It was a wreck.
All right, Geraldo Rivera is with us. This book is phenomenal. This is a book about 1,000 lives lived in one, and Geraldo takes you on this journey, which is his incredible life. It's called The Geraldo Show. I want to ask you about the daytime show when we get back. And then in the next half hour, we're going to let you call in if you want to talk to Geraldo. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. I'll get your thoughts on Stormy Daniels and all of this, you know, deep state gating and the president and much more. 800-941-SEAN, quick break. The book is on Hannity.com, Amazon.com, bookstores everywhere. It's a page-turner. I could not stop reading it. When I picked it up, I couldn't put it down. You're going to love it. A phenomenal life that he is living, and one I envy in a lot of ways. All right, as we continue with Geraldo Rivera, he's got his brand new book out. It's a memoir. It's The Geraldo Show, and he's lived 1,000 lives in one, and he's also become a very dear friend, even though we disagree. I'm going to get to that in the next half hour. People can call in and talk to you. The Geraldo Show, the Klan, the busted nose, the fighting. I'm not going to lie. I love that stuff. I was once on your daytime show years ago.
Only once. Yeah. Too bad. Yeah. You were, in terms of, I think that as people grow up or as they become, you know, they start, you know, the years start tolling, it's rare to make new friends. And I think that particularly when you're public people, there's an aspect of trust that has to be surmounted. And I think that what happened with us is at some point we said to each other, you know something, you've got my back, I've got your back. Mm-hmm. And that once that alliance is forged, nobody could break.
But I have a deep respect for you. I mean, what you explained in the last segment is you're making $5 million a year. You go to $2 million because you lost your friends on 9/11 and you wanted to go into a war zone. I'm not even going to ask your age, but I'll give you an example. We need you in Parkland. You're down in Parkland. We need you in Austin, Texas. You're down in Austin, Texas. And you want to be there. There's no better street reporter on earth. And I'm usually saying to my staff, where's Geraldo? Is he there? Because I don't want, you know where the action is. The other night when we were live on the air and you were down in Austin and you're like right behind me, you can see everything that's happening. And you bring us into that. That's a gift. A lot of people can't do that.
Well, you know, I may be lame in terms of my physical, condition.
Well, you had a bad back, so
I don't know, I had bad back surgery, so I'm pulling one leg, and I'm almost 75 years old.
Yeah.
But I love it out there. I love the, when you bring, first of all, the technology is evolved so much. When I was in Afghanistan, we had 2 tons of equipment.
Right.
That chopper, when it took off, had not only the 6 of us, but it had 2 tons of equipment.
No wonder it couldn't get over the mountains.
No wonder it crashed later.
Yeah.
Nowadays with the live view and all the technology, you really can bring the people right to the event.
How heavy would that equipment be?
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Maybe 100 pounds, maybe.
Unbelievable.
And you could do it with an iPhone now.
Crazy. You really can. Do a FaceTime.
You really could do FaceTime. I mean, yeah. It's like everyone's got a picture of whatever's going on.
All right. Geraldo's new book, The Geraldo Show, a memoir. Phenomenal life and career of courage. And he's always been in the action. And he brings you inside of a life, well, really 1,000 lives lived in one so far. And has got a lot more time and a long way to go. It's on Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. Your questions for Geraldo. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about the book. We'll talk about the president. We'll talk about Stormy Daniels and the other news of the day. As we continue, glad you're with us. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Geraldo Rivera is with us. We're going to get to your calls here, I promise, in just a minute. His brand new book is out, a memoir, The Geraldo Show. All right, so but you talk so openly about your life, and that's what makes you fun, is there is no pretense on you whatsoever, and I love that part of you. You've been married now, the fifth marriage, 18 years. How many kids do you have, and what are their age ranges?
5 children.
Yeah.
40, 30,
yeah.
25,
yeah.
23, and 12.
That's a pretty big disparity.
First 2 are boys, the last 3 are girls.
So,
but you know, the great thing about it is that
Are you a better father?
I am a much better father right now. I'm less selfish. You know, when I was a young man, I put off having kids till I was 35.
Right.
So there's a lot of churn in my social life. So
those are the stories that I know that are not in the book.
No, but we get together and you know, Erica is almost the same age as, you know, my oldest is 40. Erica is 43. But she is such a grand character, such a wonderful, loving,
how old was she? She was 27.
When we got married, she was 27. I was 60.
Yeah. Now, was that a problem at all for her?
Well, I don't know if it was there's a lot of social pressure, and certainly her parents were very concerned. And, you know, I even thought about it myself. I said, you know, there's going to come a time where I'm going to be 75 and you're going to be 43 and I'm going to be worried about your future. You're going to survive me by 50 years. I've got to make sure that I am successful enough. And
how did she take that brutal honesty from you?
You know, after 18 years together, we really have a lot of wonderful communication. She is my best friend, and she is the mother of all those children, even the children just 3 years younger than she is. She is inclusive. She's caring.
No, she's a remarkable woman.
And she can deal with it. But the funniest thing is that the wedding, you know, with all of the different religions, I'm half Catholic, half Jewish. We had the wedding at the Central Synagogue in New York, and Cheech Marin.
Your best friend.
We played Oye, ¿Cómo va, Tito Puentes? Oye, ¿cómo va?
I was reading that. Never, I nearly died.
Never played before.
That's never been played there before.
Not in that synagogue.
Yeah.
But it's been a great life. And, you know,
I'm
proud to count you as one of
my Did you
friends.
Ever, like, for example,
one of my best friends.
I feel the same about you. I worry sometimes when my dogs get older. You're really describing a very harsh reality about age.
That's it.
And I know you're healthy, and I know you've got great genes in your family, right?
My mom's 98.
98 years old.
My dad passed early. He had diabetes. I don't, thank God.
Yeah, but does that pull on you? All right, I'm going to have a kid. How old were you when you had your youngest?
Well, I'm almost 75 and she's 12, you know, so it's 63.
Yeah. So did you think when you had this kid, oh God, what if I die? No.
Well, a lot of people said, how are you going to have a kid at your age? You know, first of all, your sperm's all going to be shot.
Apparently not.
Second of all, you're going to use a walker when you go to her Little League game. But, you know, I am, you know, I go to her school all the time because I'm a good, attentive dad. And I am like the oldest. You know, I used to be, in the book I talk about, I used to be Marshall Dillon. Now I'm Chester. Yeah, I drag my limpy pudding, I drag it in there. But I still have good hair, you know, but a small waistline. I still use the same clothes.
You need the same coloring I do. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot. You're so engaged and alive. One of the things that that actually fascinated me in the book, too, is this trip with the Travel Channel. Where you went around in your boat around the world. Like, you love sailing.
I love sailing and adventure, and we sailed that old boat all around the world at the equator, going to all those fabulous places, Tahiti, Bora Bora.
And it took you 2 years.
It took 2 years, but I flew back and forth you know, to do my job. I had plenty of vacation time. Right. That's where I met Jay Monahan, you know, Katie Couric's late husband.
He died at, what, like 42?
42. He was 42, but he was my substitute host, you know, when I was away on the sailboat. And Dan Abrams also, who, you know,
he runs Mediaite and Law News.
And then so I took the boat around the world with you know, my then-wife, Cece, and then Erica finished that trip, and I took her up the Amazon, 1,400 miles up the Amazon. That was another four-hour special gift for a travel
You were describing that. I remember the Amazon trip. What was it, 2,000 miles, right, up the Amazon?
It's 1,400 miles up and back. You go up at 2 miles an hour. You come back at, you know, you're flying with that current, that mighty river in the jungle.
That's what I mean when I say you lived 1,000 lives. Let me ask you some current events. Last question first about TV. You were glad you got in that fight with those bigots.
Oh, yeah. I wore my war boots.
Yeah.
You know, my Herman Survivors with the steel tips. And a guy at one point threatened me early on. You see, the brawl is what's most famous. But the guy says, I said, careful, you're not dealing with the people you used to dealing with here.
Good.
But the problem is, I got cold cocked with that chair. It was the first thing that happened. The guy threw the chair and broke my nose.
And that's when your nose got broke, right?
But then as soon as I singled out who did it, I jumped on top of him. I was pounding the hell out of the guy. And I think it's the best studio brawl ever caught on tape.
No, I don't think it's close. I think, forget about the phony ones that Jerry Springer does.
Or Mort Downey, remember? You
know, listen, Morton Downey was a trip, too. He was a lot of fun.
He was a lot of fun.
Stormy Daniels, what'd you think?
I thought it was a pretty hyped, overblown, you know, I didn't think much of her. I liked her, but I didn't believe her. And I certainly did not believe that, you know, a single mom with an infant child in a parking lot once threatened by a thug, allegedly, who says that, you know, stay off Donald Trump, you know, allegedly, or, you know, your
stay
kid's going to grow up, you know. And you don't call 911. You don't tell any grown-ups. You don't make any documentation of it. There's no
And she
proof.
Never mentioned it earlier until now.
It suddenly now it's 2011. This
But here's the bigger question. Because, and you were probably, I don't even know if Bill Clinton survives without you. That's how pivotal a role you played in the impeachment. And we were on other sides of that issue. And you always were getting scoops because the Clinton people obviously were feeding you. The president himself was feeding you information. But you did some of your best work, too. And the most phenomenal thing about that is, okay, well, Monica was consensual, even though he had a position of power. Now we're in this Me Too era. But Juanita Broderick says she was raped. Kathleen Willey was groped, grabbed, fondled, kissed against her will. Paula Jonesy exposed himself. And the media never... In the case of Stormy Daniels, doesn't matter whether you believe or don't believe, and she's claiming a consensual relationship going back, 13 years? And the same with Karen McDougal is claiming a consensual relationship. How is it the media that ignored rape exposure and groping and grabbing is now all over this 24/7?
Because they hate Donald Trump. And it is that hatred that is speaking. I really believe that what you're seeing now, why is Stormy Daniels believed, for example, and Juana Broderick not believed? It is precisely because of their feeling of Donald Trump. They hate him. They want to destroy him. And I just want to say that I believe that you now are the rock that will sustain the 45th president. I really believe that.
Thanks a lot, Geraldo.
No, I do. I think that when you go back in 1973, like with Richard Nixon, if you had existed in 1973 in your current power and influence, Nixon never would have been forced to resign. No, but there was no support for him back in those days.
But Richard Nixon wasn't likable, though.
But the liberals ate him up.
They did.
And he had no one to defend him. Now Donald Trump has you, and to a limited extent, more limited
people
extent,
like you.
But a sincere. I love the president and will not allow people to be unfair to him. Stormy Daniels is just another example of how stories are being hyped or given inflated credibility because of the dislike. There has never been, since Nixon at least, a president who had worse press. Everything he says or does is construed in the most evil way possible. He never gets a break.
Do you agree with me that there are powerful forces against him? You got the media. I think, but for a few of us, it's basically everybody else against him. So the media is against him. Democrats obviously are against him. This deep state that we talk about is against him, and that's real. The things that they've been—we've never had a president talk to foreign leaders, and an hour later, the conversation is leaked.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. So you got the deep state, you got the media, you got Democrats, you got weak Republicans too, and these never Trumper people. That's five. That's almost like him against the world. I'm not saying he's perfect, but, I mean, he actually has a pretty large set of accomplishments, and I don't think he's doing this for fame and fortune because he already has it, and you would think people would put what's best for the country and saving the country first, but they don't. Politics is first.
When you look at, the Stormy Daniels saga and how much attention, obsessive attention, CNN, for example, is paying to that very thin story. Then you go back to the McCabe and the FBI and the two lovers and the swapping messages and so forth. It is clear, going to your point about deep state gate or the government, that the perennial government, the government that doesn't change, the people who stay in Washington, they loathe this president. It's clear, and you in your show, unbelievably, you're the only one who broke facts, not your opinion and your passion, which are important. But you were the one that came up with, and first broadcast that this guy is talking to this guy. We have to have insurance policies to make sure the president is not elected.
How does the media ignore that? You've been in this business 50. This is the biggest abuse of power scandal ever, and they're ignoring it.
They see and they repeat what reaffirms their prejudice. I think, when you look at Jeff Zucker, but he hates this president. And there's almost like a personal vendetta between the president of CNN and the president of the United States. How can that be? I think that when you look at Donald Trump's life right now, he wakes up every morning knowing that there are 20 of the best reporters on earth at the Washington Post, 20 more at the New York Times. They wake up every day trying to kill him, trying to get
destroy him.
That's how he starts his day, knowing that the world, 80% of the media is against him.
80, 98.
Maybe it is 98. That's why people say that he's obsessed with you and Fox News. It has to be.
Amy in Colorado, I'm with Geraldo Rivera. How are you, Amy? Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Geraldo.
Hi, Amy.
Honored to talk to you both. My question for you, Geraldo, you've seen a lot in your life and been to a lot of places that we probably would never go. What was the hardest part of the book you had to write as far as bringing back memories for you?
That's a great question.
The worst memory I had in Tora Bora was being accused of saying I was someplace I was not. This is the friendly fire. There was a friendly fire incident in Kandahar. I thought it was the same friendly fire incident in Tora Bora that we had seen. It was an innocent mistake, but the same forces that are attacking Donald Trump now attacked me. There I was at Fox News, which was then surging in the ratings. We came from nowhere.
You got to Tora Bora a week before anybody
else.
And
I had live cameras on things blowing up and, courage and infantry charges and casualties coming back.
And getting shot at.
Getting shot at and bombed. So I think that, Amy, the toughest thing was telling that story, how it made me, as Sean mentioned at the top of the show, almost suicidal. And then I was reckless. Then I didn't care whether I lived or died. I wanted so much to purge myself, my honor, with courage, and I tell that story.
But you also sacrificed so many millions of dollars because your commitment to do this. It was like, for example, the map drawing incident. everybody in the military loved you. You didn't give away secrets, but they tried to make it out into something it never was.
You know, it's the Roger Ailes said to me, our late lamented boss said to me, I had no idea when I hired you, you had this big bullseye on your ass.
All right, let's go to Don in Lake Ronkonkoma. You're on with Geraldo. Hi.
Hey, Geraldo. Hey, Sean. Great to talk to you both.
Thank you, Don. What's happening?
Hey, listen, I'd just like to know, I know you've been to so many dangerous assignments, like at Tora Bora, you've been down to Katrina, you covered the Ferguson riots. And
you cost me a lot of trouble that night in Katrina, by the way. Oh, man.
But big ratings, though.
A five share.
Sean, I mean, Geraldo, your dangerous assignments are well documented. What was your most embarrassing assignment?
Oh, you know, I did 2,000 episodes of my daytime show. And when I took the fat out of my butt and had it injected in my forehead to do away with the wrinkles, that's some I have to really live down.
Geraldo, we love you. I love you. It's called The Geraldo Show, and it's a memoir, a thousand lives lived in one and still going strong. It's in bookstores everywhere, Amazon.com, Hannity.com. My brother, we'll see
you
tonight on TV, and we have a big party for you 1 week from today. I can't wait. Me and Rupert Murdoch are throwing you a party.
Yeah, let's party.
It's going to be fun. All right, quick break. We'll come back, wrap things up here. We got an amazing Hannity tonight. The rest of the media will not match this. I promise you, 9 Eastern. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. I am going to eviscerate the news media in this country tonight. We've got all the sound, all the tape, all the history, and the hypocrisy. This is going to be one for the ages. And then we're going to look at victims and talk to victims, Juanita Broderick and Paula Jones, and we'll remind you how the media treated them. And the president gets tough on Vladimir Putin. Of course, that's not going to be covered tonight because that doesn't fit the Russia, Russia, Russia narrative. We've got you covered. Set your DVR. Hannity tonight at 9. Thanks for being with us. See you then. Back here tomorrow.